I'm just sitting across the aisle from you, and one of those, your toenails just hit me. It's kind of icky.
It's time for the Profitability Show. Inspiring conversations with successful business leaders, artists, and entrepreneurs that will get your blood pumping and your creative juices flowing. We'll focus on the latest and the greatest tools, techniques, strategies, and advice you can apply right now to achieve more success and improve your bottom line, no matter what business you're in. The Profitability Show, the business podcast that brings you less jargon and more margin. With your host, digital product strategist and innovator, Nick Knight.
Hello and welcome to this episode of The Profitability Show. My name is Nick Knight, and I'll be your audio Sherpa, guiding you safely through the craggy and sometimes treacherous terrain of Business Mountain. Easy bongo. Today, my guest is Scott Halford, Emmy Award-winning writer and producer, Hall of Fame speaker, and longtime consultant to Fortune 500 executive teams in the area of neuroscience. Scott is an expert at understanding and communicating how our brains work. His incredible skill at conveying the complexities of our brain chemistry and how we can learn to harness it to improve our businesses and our lives has made his recent book, Activate Your Brain, a Wall Street Journal bestseller. Prepare to literally have your mind blown. This episode can change your life and, more importantly, your brain. I know you're going to love meeting my very good friend, Scott Halford.
Scott, welcome to the show and thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I can see your brain.
You can see. Wow. You've got mad skills.
Dude.
So Scott and I met through our association in the National Speakers Association. And the one thing about Scott is, I'm just going to talk to you like you're not here. I'll talk about you like you're not here. The one thing about Scott is he's one of those people that you meet and you instantly like him. Now, I don't know if that has something to do with the fact that he's trained his brain to like sort of mesmerize us all, but he really is that guy that as soon as you meet him, you like him. And I'm sure that must help you in business and stuff. But he's one of my good pals. And so I'm excited to talk to you.
Thanks.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your business. So we know you're a speaker. We know you're an author. You consult with businesses and stuff. So tell us about neuroscience, how this works. How do you help businesses?
Yeah, in a variety of different ways. So everything that we do is through the lens of the brain. So it's about just being effective through the lens of the brain, understanding how your stamina works, your energy, your focus, decision making, just being able to interact with people at higher levels and understanding it through the neuroscience. Because, for the longest time, I think people called, what I do soft skills. And I work with a huge array of very analytical, cynical, engineer, financial types, as well as scientists who are incredibly analytical and cynical. So when you add the science in and you show them what's going on in the brain when I disagree with you and how we override that, or what goes on in the brain when I'm tired from making too many decisions, or when I'm too stressed out and I can't think right, you can look at all of that and all of a sudden it puts teeth in it. So that's what we do. And most of what I do is I do speaking and training, full day, half day, full day kinds of things, as well as I write quite a lot. And then we have a coaching contingency that works one-on-one with executives who want to kind of take a deep dive. And then I have a whole group of associates, about 140 worldwide, who are in corporations. They're working in those corporations, but we certify them through a process that they go and partake in, and that's part of what we do in terms of just our business. So all of us, everything we do is through the lens of the brain, including emotional intelligence or critical thinking or influence, neuroscience for success. It all has a brain in it. And it's not, a lot of people, I think, jumped on the bandwagon around the brain because they saw that people definitely like the teeth that come with it. Mm-hmm. But I just decided that it would be better to kind of take a deep dive on it and actually be able to take pretty complex stuff, reduce it down, and make it usable.
So that's interesting. So now, obviously, at some point in your life, you discovered that I could be functioning at a higher capacity if I understood more about what's going on in my head.
Yeah.
And So tell us a little bit about that. Like, how did you get started on this road? What has it done for you? Like, I mean, this is just so fascinating for me. I don't know if I have high emotional intelligence. I don't know if I don't know how I qualify on all those things. I mean, yeah. I have your book, Activate Your Brain. And, you know, and as I'm like looking at it, I just kind of go, you know, I don't know where I'm at on that kind of scale. But yeah. how did you discover that this was an area that you either wanted to develop or that you had? Tell us about that. I mean, I don't understand. How does that work?
Well, first off, you do have high emotional intelligence because you've bought me drinks before. So
that was smart. That was really smart of me.
IEI. yeah, exactly. Well, you know, emotional intelligence, it's not a fixed trait. And there are several attributes that go into it. And the interesting thing for me, how I got interested in it, is I had a television career before I was in this business for about 10 years. I was a television writer and producer. I did news and then I did documentaries. And at the last part of my career, I did documentaries as well as I worked with executives who wanted to be on TV, who also wanted to kind of do media blitzes. And so my services got sold to them to coach them. And I just began to see that people were most effective when they really had their head framed around kind of what they were about to present. It wasn't about the physical aspect. You know, the physical part of presenting was so much really, it really is a manifestation of what's going on in a person's head. And so we always came at it from a psychological standpoint. So I was really very fascinated in just kind of human behavior from that point. And then I started my own business in 90. And kind of went out on my own and started my own business. And then in 95, when Goleman wrote and popularized emotional intelligence, I got really excited about it. But I was working in healthcare with a lot of people who were cynical medical scientists, right? And they liked the EI stuff, but it felt like, oh, is this a Kool-Aid of the month kind of thing? Is it another one of those? And I had a really strong feeling and a really strong sense that it was not, that it really is kind of the data around the soft skills. And so I did a deep dive around it. And then they began to ask me, they would say, all right, so this is really cool, because I would explain it to them in terms of emotional intelligence is just giving intelligence to your emotions. And the emotions are the limbic part of the brain. And the intelligence is the prefrontal cortex or the human part of the brain. And it's the dance between those two that allow you to be emotionally intelligent. And if you cannot bring that prefrontal cortex online in moments of crisis, you won't be emotionally intelligent. Well, that explanation got them to ask a million questions about what turns off the prefrontal cortex, what turns on the limbic system, what makes this happen, what makes that happen. And that's how I merged into the neuroscience of it all. And just really fell in love with it. Again, because people, you could take the most cynical, jaded individual who just sits there and goes, all right, you know, if it's not on a spreadsheet, I'm not going to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And you take them and you add that science, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay. So likability is an important thing, you know. So loving is an important thing. Collaboration is a form of human relationships are critical to the operation of our brain. And you can see it, you know. And once they see that, they're like, oh, wow. So me hovering and, you know, just kind of hunkering down in my office and just typing at the keyboard, it might be good for that output. But when it comes to me leading and inspiring and getting people to do what I want to do, it's not working because I'm not connecting.
Right. Well, so that I understand completely. So when we talk about emotional intelligence, we're talking about, and it was really interesting how you put it. So basically the intelligence to kind of govern your emotions, because emotions, we know, are they just pop up and they flare up. You're mad and now you're whatever, you're nervous and you're frightened or all of those things that aren't really being caused by external forces. They're stuff that starts inside your head and then affects your performance and affects your abilities. Right. So when we're talking about emotional intelligence, we're talking about understanding it so that we can control that to perform better. Would that be a good way to
say it? Yeah, because emotions are not a choice. You don't have a choice about emotion. If I come out behind you and I scare you and I go, boom,
yeah,
you're going to have an emotional response to that. What happens after that are choices. So you have emotion that is a physiological response to stimuli in the atmosphere, right? And it can make you happy, it can make you sad, it can make you rageful, it can make you resentful, a whole variety of emotions. They're all something that is your interpretation or your interaction with the environment, right? So those are not choices. What is a choice are your feelings. So emotions and feelings are different. So emotions happen, and then within literally like 200 milliseconds, you have a feeling. And the feeling you notice, you go like, I'm scared, or I'm mad, I want to hit you because you just scared me, right? Yeah. You're feeling, and so you have a feeling, and then you have thinking, which happens another 200-300 milliseconds after that. And now you think about it. And then after you think about it, and the thinking happens very quickly, we're not talking about long drawn out, literally milliseconds. And then within about 500 milliseconds, you have the ability to choose. And that is, all right, I'm not going to hit you because you were just having fun coming up from behind that door to scare me. Right. We used to do that a lot in my family. And so the choice is where the emotional intelligence happens. So in those milliseconds after you have the emotion to the moment of choice is where a lot of people fail, because they react immediately to that feeling. And often, you know, if you're angry and you want to put your hand through a window, wait 10 seconds and you won't be breaking glass, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
5 to 10 seconds is all it takes.
And so applying this to the workforce or to the workplace, I should say. So I can imagine how if you're in a leadership position, it doesn't really matter, but we'll use that as an example. You're in a leadership position and, you know, one of your managers or somebody that works in the company fails to perform something that's pretty significant. You know, you have that sort of emotional response to, like, you know, you're already seeing the whole crumbling domino scenario of this not getting this assignment completed. And are you then going to be the kind of leader that, you know, takes charge and works from a place of kind of sanity? Or are you going to be the one that just, you know, is like the guy in the office,
right?
Ricky Gervais, you know, are you going to be that? Which guy are you going to be? But you do have a choice. And it's interesting that you don't really feel like you have a choice. You feel like it's just the thing that just flares out of you. But you really, there is that moment in time where you can choose a path.
Exactly. And, you know, when you think about, for instance, so we know one of the things that happens with the brain is it fatigues as it lives the day. And unless you give it downtime and feed it and rest it, it fatigues. And so decision fatigue sets in. So you really are really a lot worse at making decisions after 1 o'clock in the afternoon than you are in the morning. So, you know, don't buy a house or a car in the afternoon unless you've rested and fed your brain, right? Regluconated it, given complex carbohydrates, and at least given yourself some kind of awake rest. Well, if you don't do that, and that's what many executives don't do, they just kind of plow through their day dealing with react, and they have this increasing cortisol, which is your stressor hormone, just going up. Well, cortisol is a survival hormone, and it allows you to do fight or flight, right? Fight, flight, or freeze. And when you think there's a bear in the room and your neurochemistry is responding to that, because your brain doesn't know what is true and what you believe to be true, doesn't know the difference between that. So if you believe that those emails are like, oh man, this is going to be the ruin of me, right? Or you're just stressed out. Your brain sets up for survival mode, and survival mode is fight or flight, not think. And so it literally it cuts off your ability to access your prefrontal cortex, because I don't want you negotiating with the bear. I want you to run or hit it.
Right.
I don't want you to stop and go, hey, wait, bear, before, you know, you chomp down on me. Can we have a little discussion about this? So that's what people are running around with in business, is this inability to interact smartly with the environment. And as the day goes on, they get an email and they've had it, you know, they've been pelted in a million different directions. This just happened to me recently where I just was tired. I was having a ton of emails come at me. And finally, one came at me that was somebody who was doing one of what I call the nickel and dime kind of thing. Oh, but couldn't we do this and can't we do that and take this out and put this in? And finally, I just had it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I began to write the email, and I looked at it and I just took my own advice and said, you know, when you're in decision fatigue and you're in the afternoon and you're about ready to send off an emotional email, don't send it. You can write it. You take the name out of the person so you don't accidentally send it. And I sit back and, you know, if I walk away from that and I come back and I look at it, I would be mortified had I sent that.
Right.
Because I've dialed in a snarky, biting, acerbic email that does nothing except for in the moment would have made me feel like, gotcha.
Yeah.
But that didn't work. It doesn't work. So, you know, that's not intelligent. It's emotional. And, the thing that makes you feel good is not necessarily the thing that is intelligent.
That's great. Wow, what a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I want to also put a pin in something that you talked about, because I think this is important for people to remember, is that our body actually produces chemicals that go into our brain and change things. Like you're talking about cortisol and you're talking about these, you know, I think people think everything is sort of this, you know, random series of choices and everything, you know, but there's actual chemicals. It's like if you took a drug, there's a thing that happens to you that changes the way you think about things. And so what we're talking about is being able to control your response to those things, or maybe even how much of that, like whether it's the fatigue or whether it's the adrenaline or whatever those things are, but they're actual chemicals, just like drugs, that make you change.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that my book, Activate Your Brain, is about activating the neurochemistry that makes you feel, gives you a sense of well-being, makes you feel like you're in connection with people, makes you better decider, makes you a better manager, allows you to think better, gives you that energy to be focused and engaged. And so those are all things that you can activate very deliberately. And then paying attention to the things that activate in the environment that you can then do something about, like a stressor, right? So if something comes along and you get a bad email, bad piece of news, somebody walks into your office and interrupts you, and you're in the midst of something and it frustrates you, that's all chemistry. And so if you understand that, then you can go sit back and go, all right, so when I'm in this space, I am not at my finest, it's probably not the best thing to do is to react. Because that's the choice.
Yeah.
And most people feel like they have to respond to every single emotional attack that happens in their head, that they have to respond to it, to relieve it.
Yeah.
And that's what anger looks like. You know. So there's a difference between being angry and expressing anger. Two different things. Being angry is putting your hand through the window, is pounding the table, is screaming and yelling. Expressing anger is saying, I'm just really angry right now. I'm just pissed off,
right?
Is to say that, and that's all right. That's, you know, anger is a real thing. It's a signal to somebody else or to the world. I feel something has been unjust to me, and it is an injustice to me, or something's off, and it's gone against my grain. That's a signal. Anger is a signal. It's an important signal to us. But when you act angry, that's scary because it's physical, and that doesn't work typically.
Well, so tell us, like. So we always hear that, you know, get it off your chest. Don't bottle things up. It's just going to give you, you know, you're going to get ulcers. You're going to get a heart attack. You know, like you hear that all the time. Like, don't not react, you know, that it's healthier to just get it out there. But what you're saying is really, and I don't know to what degree, but you're basically saying take a step back. Don't react. Don't just blast it out there to get it off your chest. It's not the healthy choice.
Well, get it off your chest, but don't behave it. You don't want to behave it. You don't want to behave angry. You want to express angry. You want to say, I'm really mad right now. You know, I'm just really angry. If I behaved it, if I behaved how I felt, I would reach across and strangle you.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, no, that's good.
That's behaving angry. Looking at you and saying, that really makes me mad right now, is really a positive thing. There's a really cool piece of research that Kevin Oxner out of Columbia University, out of the social neurocognitive lab there, and James Gross out of Stanford, they got together and they found out that, you know, if you walk in the house and your significant other is mad, or you're mad, one of you is mad, and you don't say anything, your biochemistry will literally switch to match each other. So if I walk in, you're my significant other, I'm mad, and you don't know what's going on, and I don't say anything to you, because of our mirror neurons, our ability to read each other, mm-hmm. read emotion pretty well, something's up. We've all had that. You walk in, oh God, something's wrong. Don't know what it is. And you don't even have to speak any words. Well, my biochemistry and your biochemistry will negatively match. It will literally correlate with cortisol, blood pressure, other glucocorticoids will match. And so it's hard on a relationship, and that's what people do in business. There's a lot of conflict that happens. The boss didn't say anything. I could just feel his anger. Well, that's awful. You just feel it, right? So what they found out was just the simple act of labeling the emotion brought all of that neurochemistry, the negative neurochemistry, down. So if I walk in and I'm like, oh man, this is a bad day. I'm just really frustrated right now. That's all I have to say. It just goes.
And I think in that particular example, it also deflates because, yeah, we've all had it. You know, I've had it where, you know, I come home or my wife is upset about something. I don't know if it's me.
Right.
You know, it could be anything. She could be mad about something that happened to work or whatever. You know, like I can just see that she's not in a good mood. But I'm like, you know, you immediately start running through the little Rolodex in your head. Did I do the thing? Did I do the honey-do list? You know, what did I miss? What did I not? You know what I mean? It's like instant. Is it me? And if she just said, I'm having a terrible day. Oh, it's not me. I would all instantly relax and go, what can I do to support this person?
Yeah. One of the central cravings of the brain is context. Saying the brain learns via context, not content. And so if I don't have content around what you're thinking, and I don't have context around what you're thinking, what is a natural tendency because of a thing called the spotlight effect that happens in all of our brains is that the world is pretty much about each one of us. And so when I walk in and you're mad and I don't know what you're mad about, the spotlight's on me. And the spotlight is, what did I do? We all do that. What did I do? And so we have a tendency to fill in the blank with the most negative possibilities that we can. It's almost a defense mechanism. And so that's why mind reading in relationships is actually incredibly damaging. And because we run around with all this cortisol with each other. And so now what happens, and again, if extrapolate this to business, now what happens is every time I'm in your presence, if I begin to habituate or get used to this happening, I feel bad every time I'm with you. And so now I avoid you because mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but when I'm with you, I feel bad. And that's how relationships kind of do their spiral downward.
Interesting. And I've actually worked in companies before where I had management that was exactly like that. You know, somebody who was a very high stress kind of person who externalized through passive aggression, you know, all of the things that were bothering her. But you never knew if it was you. Sometimes it was you, you know. But it was always that thing like you just walk into their office and it was like, yeah, I don't even want to go in. Can I avoid going in there at all costs?
Yeah, exactly. And so imagine that in a relationship, in a personal relationship, and then again, the professional relationships. And then the moment that you give it context, oh, I wasn't mad at you.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh.
Yeah, now, right.
And so, that is all a part of emotional intelligence. You know, and emotional intelligence is really, it's a brain science. It really is. I wish it was called limbic intelligence. Just because, when people hear the word emotional, they think, oh, that's soft stuff. Or they're going to teach. I had a CEO I worked with one time. I was working with this company and pretty large corporation. He's like, so you're gonna teach my people how to cry, huh, through this emotional intelligence. No, I'm going to teach your people when to cry. That's what I'm going to teach. But that's what people do is they have a kind of a natural tendency to think, well, emotions – those are for girls.
Yep.
Those are for people who aren't stable. Well, they're for every human being who is alive. I love getting into conversation and the debate with executives who are like, I got to get that emotion out of that decision. I'm like, you unless you're dead or have brain damage, you can't do it. Yeah. You couldn't decide what color socks to put on today without emotion. Emotion is just weight. It's just weight. Tells you what to believe, tells you whether to believe it. It tells you a preference for something. It tells you how you should feel about something, you know, whether you should be afraid or whether you should feel joy. Emotion is your informer all day long.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, we're going to take a quick break because I want to continue this conversation about emotional intelligence because I want to ask you when we come back from the break, you know, what should we be doing? How can we start to, you know, learn how to control this? Or you know, you've mentioned things like food intake. You've talked about rest. You've talked about a lot of different things. So when we come back, I want to find out what can I do right away to start improving my emotional intelligence. But we're going to take 1 minute from our sponsor.
Are you looking to learn business strategies from some of the top experts in the world? Or are you looking to earn income as a leading expert yourself? At Revisit, we empower leaders, innovators, and experts to create online learning products that get better over time. Interactive learning products on Revisit remain live connected to the creators, who can add or update the content instantly, offer direct access and feedback, exclusive communities, and even special discounts and offers. Our unique app-based solution means the products you buy or create will remain exclusive and valuable in the hands of paying customers only. So, start learning or start earning at revisit.com. That's R-E-V-I-Z-Z-I-T.com.
And now, back to the Profitability Show.
And we're back with Scott Halford, Hall of Fame speaker, best-selling author, Emmy Award-winning producer. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier. And expert in the area of neuroscience. We're talking about emotional intelligence. And so, Scott, I wanted to ask you, like, what can we do? So we talked about why it's important. Now, what can we actually do to start making improvement in our own emotional intelligence?
Well, there are a lot of things. You know, it's a big pie that you can cut in a lot of different ways. And where we typically start is just through an awareness. Really, just kind of starting to note, where is your tender spot? Where are your hot buttons? When are you most at risk in terms of communicating badly? You know, one of the places I ask people to look at is the transition between work and home. Literally walking into the house is one of the most tender times for most relationships. When you are re-entering and that transition time actually is a place of quite a lot of conflict. And just kind of noticing what you're doing in that space, noticing how it is that you engage with your work. Are you interested or are you just kind of going through the motions? Do you feel, you know, how do you feel? Do you feel excited about things or are you just kind of like, yeah, whatever. How you doing? Oh, yeah. Okay. And start noticing that. And that awareness is really huge because it's what people are noticing about you. And so if you kind of dial it all the way back and think about why this would be important. Well, it's important because we're a social species. We are one of the most pro-social species on the planet. It's how we survived. You know, when we were in the caves and everything could eat us and could poison us, everything was stronger, faster, fiercer than we are. We're smarter. Our brain allowed us to be smarter. And so when we were in the caves, what we did, you know, we huddled together and went, wow, you know, we're going to need to help each other to get out of here. And so we created these tribes. Mm-hmm. And the created protection, and we became a pro-social being, which means that I need to understand how to interact with you at your worst and your best, and vice versa. And if you can't understand what your impact is when you walk in the room, you probably can't get to the place of altering your emotional intelligence. So awareness is huge. That's the first step. Second step, I think we all, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you get old enough, you're going to have cataracts. I think if you live long enough, you should actually measure your emotional intelligence. And there are lots of measurements. We use the EQI 2.0 just because it's got the, in our experience, really got the psychometric licks that we need to work in the corporations. There are others out there for sure. This is not a diss of any other instrument. It's just pro that one. We like that one a lot. And getting measured and really kind of coming to grips with your scores, you know, looking at that going, wow, look at that. I don't have a lot of impulse control. Or look at my well-being score. I mean, geez, I think I'm going to, you know, I'm making a lot of money. I'm at work. I'm successful. But my well-being score is significantly below average. And when you get people like that, and I do all the time, and this is the first time they've seen this in black and white, right? In the score kind of thing. And you get into discussion with somebody who can debrief those scores. What ends up happening is they go, wow, I never thought about the fact that, yeah, I'm making a lot of money. I'm successful by all of the measures that everybody else thinks I should be successful by. But I'm kind of miserable. Mm-hmm. And that opens up this huge door of things, which unlocks all kinds of things. And so this awareness is huge. And a lot of people, you know, we in this society, especially in a Western society, we get so used to banging our heads against the wall that we don't feel it. And then when somebody comes along and says, you know what, that banging your head against the wall, that's kind of damaging your head. And you pull your head away and all of a sudden you go, oh, my God. It really hurts, right?
Right.
And we just sometimes need somebody to do that for us. And we get numb to our impact. And I think people who are aware, they walk into a room, they notice what they've done. Go onto an airplane and watch how clueless people are. Just walking onto an airplane, how they get a me bubble. They don't realize there are people behind them trying to get on the airplane, right?
Right.
They believe that their seat is their zip code. And they own everything about it, and that they would do things there that you would never expect anybody to do in public. People who are aware don't do that. You know, people who are conscious of how they interact with other people, how they're affecting other people.
Right.
It's really critically important.
That's really interesting. That's one of my pet peeves. I mean, fortunately, from what you're saying, I fall on the good side of that thing. But I'm one of those people who's very aware of how am I impacting other people around me, like, you know, whether it's how loud is something I'm listening to, or whether is my elbow crossing over into his space and taking up the whole arm, like all of that stuff. I'm very aware of that stuff, and I'm always kind of, you know, fascinated is not the right word, I don't know what the word is, but how can people, like, you know, you just go, what is this guy thinking, you know, like next to me, the guy who's dropping, you know, candy wrappers in your lap, because, you know, it's like, what?
And they're great. My favorite one, just to quick divergence. I was on an international trip and I was up in business class, and this guy is clipping his toenails. That's so disgusting. But I score high in assertiveness on emotional intelligence, and so and I'm also relatively empathetic and flexible, and you know, I've got enough of the skills to hold up my assertiveness to not come out as a jerk.
Right.
And so I sat there. I had to think about it. This is emotional intelligence, actually. Right here is how it happens. Is I'm sitting there. It's irritating me, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, it's going to continue unless I say something about it. Then it's my fault if I'm irritated, right? Because I'm not doing anything about it. So I think, all right, what could a person say to someone? And so finally I go across, and, you know, unfortunately it was a little white lie, but I just said to him, you know, I'm just sitting across the aisle from you, and one of those, your toenails just hit me. And would you mind doing that in the bathroom? It's kind of icky. And people around me went, yeah, that'd be really great. And, you know, they were waiting for somebody else to come along and say something. But what a clueless kind of thing. But, you know, getting back to your question, when you think about, you know, where do we start? We start with starting to notice the results we get in our life. It's people who are not emotionally intelligent are really surprised at the negative things that come. These are people who are surprised that every time that there's a problem in their life, they happen to be present. They have no idea. They have no connection to that. They don't see the connection between the problems and themselves. So there's lots of surprises for them. And when you get aware, you start to go, oh, wow, you know what? Yeah, that person all of a sudden got defensive and nasty back at me. And that wasn't their fault. I pushed them. I actually created a space for them to get nasty and defensive at me.
Mm-hmm.
When you start doing that, you start changing the way you approach people, even if you're mad. You know, is your goal to get right and even, or is your goal to have a positive result? And if it is, you're going to take a different tack. So to get emotional intelligence, you know, begins with awareness. And then when you have that awareness, you can start to see, wow, that thing that I'm doing right there does not work. And that thing that I'm doing right there does. And you do more of the thing that does work, and you change and alter the things that don't. And it takes time. It takes a willingness to get feedback from people, to hear. I just did this the other day. I was on the phone with someone. I had lost my wallet. And I was at a restaurant the night before, and I called them the next day. And I just said, you know, can you check to see if somebody left? She goes, well, nobody's in right now, and I just don't have the time to look at it. Well, that made me a little bit kind of angry because she didn't understand my urgency. I was going to have to cancel all of my credit cards, right? And it's weird when you lose your wallet. And I'm like, there's no way that you can go check. Well, if we do have it, it's in the safe and it's probably locked up and there's no one here. I'm like, so you literally have no way as an establishment where people leave things to actually find things that they might leave. You would have me wait till the end of the day. She goes, yep, that's pretty much it. I'm like, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And she's like, that's how it happens. And she got really, really kind of defensive. Well, she was on a speakerphone and a friend of mine who was there, he goes, well, she's definitely not going to look now. And I said, did I come at her pretty hard? And he goes, well, you weren't wrong, but your tone was kind of put down. Mm-hmm. And I heard that. And so we went into the restaurant. I actually apologized to her because I really wanted the wallet. And so I went in and just said, hey, I want to apologize. I was just feeling really urgent and feel real freaky and not have my wallet. And she's like, I apologize too. I just was crazy. We just walked in. We don't have your wallet. Well, if you're not willing to have that feedback and change from it, you're not going to get emotional intelligence. And I teach it. You know, and so people think it's a destination. It's not. We are all on this journey. We will all be working on all of our emotional intelligence for the rest of our lives. And the whole point is this, is that get on the journey and start to notice. And you're just going to get a lot better results in your life.
No, oh, it's really great stuff. It's so interesting how important, I mean, I can see how this is like the tentacles reaching out into everything we do and everybody we interact with. And so this is really, really great advice. So Scott, I want to kind of turn the spotlight around now and aim it at you because, you know, one of the things we like to talk about on the show is, you know, I talk to a variety of different types of business people. You know, I've had ventriloquists, I've had, you know, rock stars and marionette artists. I mean, like, right? Really unusual jobs, all very successful at what they do.
Love
it. And what I love about that is that it doesn't matter what your job is. We're all in the same business of being in business. There's fundamental truths to every job, right? You have to turn a profit or you're not in business.
Right.
You have to sell. You know, it doesn't matter what business you're in. There's some element of sales involved. So that's what I like to kind of discover is finding somebody who's successful at their business and saying, it doesn't matter that we're in different businesses, but what do you do to be successful? And maybe there's a way that I can learn something from that for my own business. So, and what we call these your profitability. So this is where... that thing that I want to ask you is what is that thing that you say, you know what, if I would just do some more of this, it turns into money in the bank, whatever that may be, if it's reaching out to new people, whatever that might be for you, because every business we're finding out has got a different profitability. What would that be for you?
It's such a great question. It's a question I hope people ask themselves as you are asking, you know, the people you interview, because that's a big question. And, you know, I don't know that I've thought about it deeply, but I would say, you know, when you and I were talking before, it hit me and I thought, God, you know, what would I say for that? And there are a couple of things. I know that in what I do and how I do it, staying ahead of the science and what's out there and kind of being on top of that. So the more that I research and the more that I write about it, the more profitable it becomes. And it's not always a direct profitability, right? Because if I write for HuffPost or Entrepreneur or any of those, they're not paying me for that. But what it does is it locks in my credibility with big paying clients, you know, because they're buying a bundle. They're buying this bundled human being, if you will. Mm-hmm. They want to know that you're in it. It's not a fly-by-night thing. You're everywhere. You're ubiquitous. Love that word, right? Good. That's a good Scrabble word, by the way. You know, you're everywhere with that message, and you're one of the go-to experts or thought. I don't like the word expert, but people use it, right? Because it always makes me feel like, well, once you're expert, you're done, and I'm not done. And so that's where I make my money is that, you know, most people aren't willing to take the deep dive. My first book was called Be a Shortcut, and the whole idea, even though the title was a little bit weird, the whole idea was, you know, we're all too busy to do all the things we need to have in our lives, and if you can actually be a shortcut for someone and be the one who dives deeply into a topic and they don't have to and you curate it for them, you become highly valuable.
That's great.
And so that's what I do. I'm a shortcut for people. I do that. And then I think, you know, you had mentioned something really interesting to me, and I hadn't thought about it, but I love the thought, is that profitability is not always about money. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, profitability is also about headspace and about downtime. And I think one of the things that will make me, that does make me more profitable is downtime, is literally like this week. We're doing this podcast because I'm in Denver. Typically, I'm on an airplane and I'm in a different location. And certainly, we could do this from a different location. But when I'm home and I get downtime, this is such huge recharging that allows me. I love it. I love being home, and then it allows me to love being gone, and it allows me to have the energy for clients to say to me, how is it that you keep your energy up all day long? You're standing in front of us, and it's interesting, it's content filled, and it's entertaining. How do you do that? Well, I do it because I recharge, and so that's a profitability thing.
For absolutely, I think that's a really huge one. And you know, and ever since I've known you, you know, you strike me as a person that is always very kind of bright, very, you know, you always have a smile on your face. You always seem, you know, ready to go and engaged, and you know what I mean? Like, you're not a kind of a grumbly peg sometimes, or like, oh, Scott's in a bad mood. It's like, I don't ever see that side of you. I'm sure it must exist in some place, but generally speaking, you look like a guy who's really happy with his life, really happy with his job. I know we're friends on, you know, social media and stuff like that. I see that you go on company retreats to like nice tropical getaways and things. And, you know, and I think that's a really important part of the process of being able to be happy in your job is, like you said, being able to have downtime, being able to get your head, even if it's, even as you said earlier, in the day, you know, it doesn't have to be a vacation, just in the day, giving yourself a little place to rest, to kind of recharge, and then you can go back out with a smile on your face. So, I mean, I see you're kind of walking proof of it must be working.
Well, thank you. I work at it. I mean, I'm cognizant of it. It, number one, you know, it's kind of, it's kind of the Hawthorne effect, or Richard Restek. He's a physician, a neurologist, and he said, you know, I'm altering your brain as a result of you observing me.
Interesting.
And vice versa, and which is really kind of cool. I mean, I love that thought, and it's kind of like if you observe your life and you observe who's in it. And you begin to kind of pay attention to all the things that we just talked about, you know, paying attention to how you show up. Part of that is not just your impact on people, but your impact on yourself. And, you know, I sometimes get mad where I'm like, oh, I can't believe this. And I sit back and I think about it. I'm like, well, I was the one who chose that. I have friends who will say that to me every once in a while. You know, I mean, you don't see those grumbly moments. I will never forget this. I was sitting down, and this is going to sound really awful, right? So I want your listeners to hear the whole thing out.
Okay.
I was in Hawaii on vacation, and I got a contract to speak. There was a multiple city contract to speak in different places, so I could not only select a few of the cities. I had to do all of them or none of them, right? And one of them was in Geneva, Switzerland, 2 days after I got home from Hawaii. Well, this is how it happened. I flew home, got into Denver at Monday at 9 o'clock in the morning, went to my car, switched luggage, went back into the airport, got back onto an airplane, went to Geneva, arrived there on Tuesday, spoke on Wednesday, came home on Thursday.
Oh,
yeah. And my friend, and I was telling this to a friend, and he's like, oh, you know, Hawaii, Geneva, I'm jet setting. You know, it sounds very jet setty. It was actually a horrible way to end an amazing vacation.
Right.
Just because I'm going halfway around the world. And secondly, you know, it just was really tiring. And it wasn't, you know, I didn't get to see Geneva. I was literally in a hotel and went to dinner with a client. And as I was complaining, he's like, well, you know, you chose that. And of course, I wanted to defend myself. But the real truth of it is I chose that. And we do a lot of that. And when you choose no downtime and you're cranky all the time, that's your choice.
Yeah.
And you know, so that's why I, you know, for me, I try to recharge. I, you know, you see me at conferences and you see me when I'm there, but you don't see me when I leave. And I do leave a lot. You know, I go to my room a lot. I go get downtime.
That's good.
So, you know, that I know what I need to do to refuel and recharge. And that does make me more profitable. It makes me allow to connect to people in a different way.
That's great. Well, and I think it's important also for us to learn what that means to recharge and downtime, because I think people do things, activities that they think are downtime, but they're really actively engaging their brain. Like, I'll just throw out the quick example would be, I'm going to go and chill with a game of Call of Duty. You know, it's like, you know, or something like, right, you know, that you're not really letting your brain just kind of, you know, relax. And you know what I mean? You're going from one really intense environment into another mentally intense environment, which isn't necessarily downtime. And I kind of discovered that because I like to play games sometimes to just kind of unwind, and it's just fun. And it's kind of, and for me, it's more like it's escapism, right? I'm going off into some fantasy world and doing this thing. But what I found was when I go for walks in the morning, you know, so I take my son to school and then I go for a walk. And when I'm walking, one of two things happens. Either I'm listening to a business podcast like this one. So hopefully somebody's out there walking right now and listening to this show. And I love that because that charges me up for the day because I'm getting new ideas and new things and, you know, and I'm excited for the day. But other times I take the headset off and I just walk and I listen to the birds. You know, it sounds really corny, but I know. I mean, I listen to what's going on. I take deep breaths and smell the, you know, I'm walking past someone's garden. I mean, like that kind of stuff. And it's amazing how my mind, it's like I'm sleeping. It's like your mind just wanders off into these thoughts and you start to develop, you know, your brain has time to like stand back and go, okay, I've amassed all this information, but you never give me time to do anything with it. And that's when I'll find that, you know, like pieces of the puzzle start fitting together and you know, now you're coming up with new ideas and new things. So anyway, I think that's all part of that, you know, relaxing, taking time off, because your brain needs that time to kind of reprogram the stuff that you've put into it.
100%. And, you know, it's not an accident that you come up with your best ideas in the shower or on a walk like that. Or just, I have a pond, a koi pond in the back. I sit there every day that I'm home, and I sit there and I literally just watch them. And I don't take out my phone. I don't connect to any electronics there. And I just sit there and I watch them.
That's fantastic. I love that.
It's amazing. And, you know, the science behind it is pretty robust. And that is that, your insights aren't going to happen in the room. In other words, you know, when you get into a meeting at work and everybody's like, okay, we've got to come up with the answer, that's not where the answer is going to come. The answer is going to come after you leave the room, you've debated in the room, you haven't come to an answer, you come to impasse, and then you are just kind of walking around, noticing in the world, and all of a sudden doing your walk from school, taking a shower. Water literally alters the way that you think, being
wow,
in water.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because you don't have any electronics there. It brings down your cortisol. You're paying attention. You have to focus typically, or not focus at all. You know, in the shower, you're just pretty much going through a routine stuff, right? And you allow this activity in your brain to happen called gamma waves. And gamma waves is where insight happens. And gamma waves won't happen when your brain's noisy. It's in an alpha state. If it's in an alpha, it's kind of a crazy state. It won't happen. So the insight comes in the trough. That's where it happens, and that trough is the downtime. We're sitting there, and you're like, "Oh, bam!" And it just it hits. And we think, I think we have convinced ourselves that our insights come because we're proactive on something, and part of that is true. You know, you got to feed your brain, you got to feed your intellect on a topic, and an issue. If you're working on an issue, feed, research. Put it in your head, think about it, then walk away from it. And after you and pose yourself a question, what am I going to do with that? And then you walk away, and in the most unlikely times, and typically during downtime, where you're not stimulated by other things requesting your attention, your brain goes, and it shows you what you already know. It's just the most amazing thing. It gives you insight. And insight is literally giving you sight inside of your brain. Your brain is literally a few seconds ahead of your non-conscious brain is a few seconds ahead of the prefrontal cortex. It already knows something before you go. And when you go, oh, bam, that's your prefrontal cortex getting that message. It's the aha.
Wow.
That's so, the aha.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Scott Halford has just given me permission to lay around in the hammock every day. I'm so excited.
Every day.
Absolutely. So, Scott, I could talk to you, on and on about this. It's such a fascinating subject, and there's so much to learn here. And I think you've given everybody a lot to think about and a lot of stuff we can apply right away, which is fantastic. I love that. So tell us, what's going on now with Scott Halford, Complete Intelligence, the name of your company, CompleteIntelligence.com. What's going on? What's next for you? Any books, any places that we can come and see you? Any challenges that you're facing? What's going on with you?
Yeah, so we're morphing in a lot of different ways. I'm doing I'm speaking more than I've ever spoken before, and that's all good. I'm out there and doing that. We're kind of being asked to do a lot more keynotes. That's that 45 minute to hour kind of thing where you go into a convention and the keynote speaker, as opposed to full day trainings. I'm doing quite a lot of those, but getting more of the keynote kind of thing. So I'm spending a lot of time working on that, working on the keynote, working with coaches around it just to kind of perfect it. It's a whole different platform. You've got to have a lot of entertaining to it. So I'm working on that. The book came out a year ago, and it's doing really well, and people are liking it because I think it is just kind of giving them insights into themselves that are usable. And so that's doing really well. I don't have any book right now on the horizon. After this last one, I'm like, I'm never doing it again. Because the book's evidence-based, and it takes a lot longer to write that kind of thing. You're really writing to evidence and making sure everything you say is cross-checked by science. So that was hard. But, I might have another one coming along. And one of the other things, I think in my business and probably a lot of businesses – I know one of my largest clients is GE, and they have just switched to calling themselves the world's digital industrial company, and they literally have made that pivot and have spent millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars on acquiring software engineers, opening an office in San Ramon, really creating chief digital officers. The digitization of the world is upon us, and in my business, in the speaking, in the transference of information and expertise, I think if people aren't figuring out and starting to go down the path of digitization, they're going to miss the boat from a business perspective. I mean, there's only so much of me that can show up in a room.
Yeah.
And that's powerful. I mean, it's the most powerful thing, and we'll still do that. But people want to take some of that home, and they want it to continue. They don't want it to be like an after-dinner mint where it tasted good while you're in the room and it's gone the moment you're gone. And so figuring out that, and as well as gamification, we know that people's attention spans, they're not shorter than they ever were. It's just that we have more to look at, and so it seems shorter. But because of that, and because we now have the technology to look at a lot of things very quickly and actually string them together in a way that creates learning, that's what we're looking at is, how can we digitize what we're doing, gamify it, make it fun, allow people to compete with each other on this stuff, and at the same time kind of have an effect and alter their lives in a way that they wish to. And I think that's important. I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Very cool. Very cool. So now we know we can get your book at a number of the usual places, and I'll have links to both of your books on the show notes of this episode page. Where can our listeners find out more about Complete Intelligence? And if they wanted to, say, have you come and speak for their organization, where would we get a hold of you?
Yeah. So if you go to CompleteIntelligence.com, all one word, you can find all my digits and data there. And there's links to be able to connect with the people in my office if you are interested in discussing about coming into your company, and certainly links to the book and other useful things. I've got some blogs on there and some other cool things that I think you'll find. Just tootle around on the website.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. And I'll just give you a quick plug on a shameless self-promoting plug that if you're interested in Scott's work, you might want to check out what he's got on Revisit, because I know you got some original video series and also some interesting bundles with his book Activate Your Brain there as well. So there's some exclusive kind of material there. You might want to check that out.
Yep, Scott, your brain matters.
Scott is a great, great guest. I know that everybody listening just got so much out of this. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for hanging out, especially when it's your downtime at home. So thank you, sir. Always great to see you.
You as well.
All right. Take care, man. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to learn more profit abilities, go to profitabilityshow.com for episodes, show notes, and more. And be sure to click the subscribe button to get the latest episodes delivered straight to your favorite device.